I've come in and out of circles of churches, and especially now working as a full-time international worker. The Alliance has been a family to me, and I was able to be, like Ian said, go to the Philippines. I was able to go to the Philippines, and for the first journey, I went to Cebu City as a college student working with an intervarsity type program called PSALM, Philippine Student Alliance Lay Movement, and they just actually celebrated their 50-year anniversary, so that ministry has been around for a long time, and I was able to join that. I was then there back again and lived there for 12 more years, and then moved to Dipolog, which is in Mindanao. And then we moved to Manila with my coworker just 2 years ago. And Lord willing, I'll be moving back down to Davao City when I go back after my one-year home assignment. So that 1 year, it was kind of an exchange program. When I went to the Philippines in 1990 for the first time, it changed the way I thought of the world. I was with a team of my friends from college, and one of the workers that I was working with at the time, a missionary called Ron Goshlak, I think is from this church or did an internship or something here, and he sends his greetings. We're still in touch, and we've had a great connection all these years. His daughter married a Filipino in the Philippines, so they go back and forth and visit their grandkids yearly. So greetings from Ron Goshlak. Some of my teammates are continuing also on doing international work, and we keep in touch also regularly. I was able to go back in February to Cebu City when Ron and Lynn were there visiting, and Dan and Linda Harstead were also there as a kind of reunion, and Carol Ardell from Prince George also came with me. We were able to go and teach at the Bible College in Davao City, Davao Alliance Bible College, and I was able to teach a class there, and she was teaching a class down the other side of the hallway, and it was a wonderful chance for us to encourage young people to think about missions. In fact, the Christian and Missionary Alliance Churches of the Philippines, CAMACOP, are pivoting with us now because the national church has actually been around for quite some time. There are many wonderful Filipino believers in Jesus, and so I am the last Christian Missionary Alliance missionary in the Philippines to be working alongside of our national church, and we're in a big pivot right now to bring alongside and continue sending international workers around the world, and even continuing to work in the national church there in the Philippines. As you can see here, we have 19 units of cross-cultural ministries that people that have gone to other countries from the Philippines to work to bring the kingdom. We have 23 units working with the Filipina diaspora, meaning they're working with Filipinos in Japan, in Singapore, in Hong Kong, in different areas where there are a great amount of Filipinos working, encouraging them, helping them with some of the situations they find themselves in. And we do have 8 units that are working among mostly tribal and Muslim work within the Philippines, sent out by the National Church. So we want to continue to partner with these people and send more and more young people and people around the world to the least reached nations of the world. The mission of the CAMACOP aligns with the Christian Missionary Alliance Churches of the Philippines and the U.S. and other places, Australia, that we partner with. And it's been a desire and a goal of mine to continue to send more and more Filipinos around the world. Are there Filipinos here? I thought. Where are you from? Oh, konti lang sa kong Tagalog. Nag-aaral na ako ng Tagalog, pero konti lang. So I just want to say that I've been so welcomed in the Philippines, and I see such vibrancy, and everywhere I go in Canada, I see Filipinos, and we can pick up a conversation. Pero Bisaya ko kay Cebu. So it's always a pleasure to join partnership with the opportunities God is giving Filipinos around the world. In fact, some of the opportunities that they have are places where some of us who have white skin cannot go as international workers, but we can encourage them to go to places where they can work or also get a job that gives them a chance to share the kingdom with their employers and with their co-workers. So it's been my pleasure to be a part of what God is doing in the Philippines, and I look forward to going back in a year from now. So let me begin asking if there's anyone, is there anyone 12 years old here? Maybe they 12 years old. That's a long time to live, right? Yeah. Who's in grade 12? Is anyone here in grade 12? Well, that's a long time to go to school. And who remembers life before Facebook? Right? That's 12 years ago. That's about 12 years ago. And so that's a lot of social media time. And so in some ways, 12 years is a long time, but in some ways, 12 years can go by very fast. We're going to look at a story today to discuss about a little girl who died when she was 12 and a woman who was sick for 12 years. Follow me, if you can, and please find in the Word, Mark 5. I'm just going to read this briefly. It doesn't show up very clearly, but let me read from Mark 5, starting in verse 18. While Jesus was saying these things, a leader of the synagogue came to him. He bowed down before Jesus and said, "My daughter has just died, but if you can come and lay your hands on her, she will live again." So Jesus and his followers stood up and went with the leader. Then a woman who had been bleeding for 12 years came behind Jesus and touched the edge of his coat. She was thinking, "If I can just touch his clothes, I will be healed." And Jesus turned and saw the woman and said, "Be encouraged, dear woman. You are made well because you believed." And the woman was healed from that moment on. Jesus continued along with the leader and went into his house. There he saw the funeral musicians and many people crying. Jesus said, "Go away. The girl is not dead, only asleep." But the people laughed at him. After the crowd had been thrown out of the house, Jesus went into the girl's room and took hold of her hand, and she stood up. The news of this spread all around the area. What a wonderful story of Jesus' work in the world. The first thing I notice about this story is that Jesus was interrupted, in some of his ministry, he was interrupted. And maybe you also feel like this sometimes. You have a plan, but God's plan puts you on a different type of trajectory where there are some interruptions. But those are also opportunities for us to recognize God's plan. There are several players in this story that we just read. The father, the leader of the synagogue, Jesus, the bleeding woman, the disciples, the funeral processional, and the dead girl. Let's first start to talk about the anxious father. The leader of the synagogue has a righteous reverence for the power of the person of Jesus. Something Jesus has said or done in the area in the past few weeks or days has made an impression on him. Even though he is a Jewish keeper of the law and traditions type of guy, who may not have given this new teacher healer much regard before now, he is now in a place of desperation. A distressed father, first and foremost, he has felt the need which has brought him to this moment, to his knees, when his only daughter has died. He said, "Touch her or lay your hands on her and she will be healed." But I wonder how he knew that. There is something about Jesus' touch that he had heard about. Can you think of other places in the Bible, even before this, as a Jewish synagogue, leader in the synagogue, that he might have known why it would be just that Jesus' touch would heal her? Maybe talk amongst yourselves. Is there a partner or people beside you? Is there any other thing that you can think of that would have made this Jewish leader recognize that this is all that he needed to do, was have Jesus go to her side and touch her? Why would he have thought that? I'm going to drink. Any ideas? Any thoughts? In the centurion is another account of when Jesus was asked to go somewhere and touch his servant. Yeah, so that story may have intersected. In this passage where we read in Mark, that doesn't say that in this account, but it is in Matthew. Yep. Any other reason? Okay. There was an incident where Elijah healed a young boy. In fact, he laid on him, and he was come back to life. So this Jewish leader had a precedent that he wanted Jesus to heal his dead daughter, and he wanted to see if this would work for his family, right? And so some of our experience, some of our knowledge about Jesus can come back to us in a time of need, right? The father is desperate, and now he is hopeful. And sometimes when we are anxious to save someone we love and who is in need enough, we do things we might not be in line with our previous doctrine or theology, but things come back to us. And if it's about Jesus and the kingdom of God, it's worth the risk. And that anxious father took the risk to ask Jesus to come to his home. The next character is the calm Jesus. Notably, Jesus is unaffected and unflapped, neither by the throngs of crowds around him nor by the demands of a few individuals. He honors the loud public appeal to go to an important someone's house as much as the trembling touch of a faith-filled, seemingly unnoticed, weak woman. He was dramatically attentive to healing requests of both the insistent church leader and the unsuspecting silent hopes of an ill woman. If we want to live like Jesus, I would invite us to be his hands and feet to a dying, deprived generation and pay attention as Jesus did. And we will need to pay attention to the popular people who have urgent requests and demands on our time, as well as the invisible or needy people that may go unnoticed. Jesus was the merciful, compassionate Savior, and he accepted the request of this rabbi following him through crowds to visit his home and his dead daughter. The Messiah is on the move. Help is on the way. But yet he is interrupted, but he remains calm, and now we focus on the bleeding woman. Jesus is interrupted by a sick woman, an unclean woman. And in your understanding, or just the reading of this story, what age do you think this woman is? Have you thought or heard in other accounts how old this woman might have been? About 50? You're thinking around middle age? Any other thoughts? 40. I actually read something that she might have been bleeding because of something that happened in puberty. And so 12 years out, she might have been even younger, maybe 30, maybe in her early 20s. But it's an interesting perspective, depending on how old you think she was or what kind of woman you think she was. Just to imagine yourself in her place, whether she was a young woman or an old woman. She had the courage, and we're going to imagine us in her shoes. The compiled accounts, actually, of the woman revealed, and I've just put them there. I put them, it's too small, but just so you can see, and I've made a mistake, it's actually Matthew 9, Mark 5, and Luke 8. And so for later reference, you can see that those parallel passages are all the same story, written and rendered by different people as their memory served them or as they got the story from someone who got the story from someone. There are some details that I just want to imagine in this story this morning. There is actually no indication of her age from the text, and so whichever age she was bleeding. She was sick with a disease that the doctors either did not know how to cure, or maybe she had been passed around from doctor to doctor. It says she spent all her money. Or that maybe her money was not enough to go to the best doctor. But we know that she's broke. She's sick and getting worse. She's bleeding. She's unclean. And she's weary. As a Jewish woman, she would have already been discriminated against. She was sickly, so she might have been even outside her social or family circles and feeling lonely. And she may have even been told that it was her bleeding, because it was her fault because of sin that she had committed. So she was embarrassed and an outcast, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Unclean and rejected, body, mind, and soul. But yet so helpful, hopeful. She was desperate, but yet so hopeful. After I lived in the Philippines several years, I realized that I was getting more and more tired. And I remember being overwhelmed with some relationships in my work and remember the stress and the frustration. But for years, I did not slow down my pace. I had created a non-government organization in Cebu and moved several times. We rented an office space to run a livelihood business with 7 sewers, 10 jewelry makers, some weavers, an office of 5 staff, 7 student volunteers that we were helping through college. I was juggling the finances, and we had several ministry partners, and I was in the midst of hosting my 4th intern from Ambrose University. And I was bleeding. Not all the time, off and on, but it was for about 3 years, sometimes heavy, sometimes nothing. Finally, reluctantly, and with a close friend, I went to a doctor to get a checkup, and after a few weeks of tests and a biopsy, I found that I had cancer in my uterus. Now back to our story. It is Jesus at the center stage on his mission. In a wider account of our story, he is on the way to revive an important man's only daughter. Maybe now at an intentional, fast-paced walk and the crowd close, but the bleeding woman closer and right there with them. Jesus, both all-powerful and ultra-perceptive, is full of grace and full of truth. He sees he's most merciful and compassionate, and he is what the crowds have come to see, and the spotlight is on him. It says in all 3 passages that the woman came up and stood behind Jesus. So courageous. But she wanted to go unnoticed. But she touches his clothes, and now she knows that she has stopped bleeding and has been healed. On December 23 of 2010, I found out that my bleeding was the evidence that it was uterine cancer. And on January 4th, not 2 weeks later, 2011, I had a hysterectomy taking my uterus, ovaries, and all the cancer. I had no radiation, no chemo, and I had been healed. And a lot of things changed in the years following my recovery. So I can identify that with this woman that, as embarrassed as it is to have something wrong with you and not wanting to check it out, there's hope in reaching out and finally asking for help and finally getting yourself to someone who could help. And I was so blessed to be able to have good doctors and be able to have people help me provide for the care I needed in the Philippines. And it was a meaningful time to have friends around me supporting. Okay, back to our story. The woman suddenly becomes visible, strong, and courageous. Since her private deliberations are recorded in Matthew and Mark, we are privy to her inner thoughts. Jesus releases his healing power onto someone so convinced in her mind only, if only I can just touch the hem of his garment, I will be healed. What courage, what faith, what a touch. Mark and Luke record that she herself came forward and fessed up. No one actually outed her, but she was the one who came forward. But this was not yet still her finest moment. Mysteriously and with a sudden jolt on a sick woman, the spotlight shifts, and it was now Jesus shared the spotlight with this woman who declares his blessing on her, that her bleeding was healed, and that her healing journey had begun. Because you believed, it says in the New Century Version, translated in all 3 accounts, in Matthew, be encouraged, dear woman, you are made well because you believed. And the woman was healed from that moment on. In Mark, dear woman, you are made well because you believed. Go in peace and be healed from your disease. In Luke, dear woman, you are made well because you believed. Go in peace. Because of her secret faith, an embarrassing disease, she was now healed in public and made whole physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and was given a commission, as Jesus often does to those who he heals. Go in peace, and you be the one to share your story of healing and peace to others. This now healed woman became an agent of peace. About a year after my recovery from cancer, I asked our Christian Missionary Alliance leaders in my region, Asia Spice, if there was anything other than the opportunities that I was doing, are there other places that I could be in a different line of work in order to maximize my time on earth and my gifts? It was that time I was also involved in the ministry of Kairos. Has anyone heard of Kairos? I know there are some here that have been connected with curriculum developed from the Perspectives course that's broken down into 9 weeks and is led by in Canada by Lorna Johnson, the sister of Bruce. And it was developed in the Philippines, in Butuan, Mindanao, to make some of the statistics about the historical, the biblical, the cultural, and the strategic aspects of mission more interactive and more aware for this generation. And I was in the midst of doing Youth Kairos, and we were training some pastors in Cebu to do the Kairos course in our churches there. And one of the staggering statistics are that 85% of our mission force is working with people who are already reached in areas where Bibles are available, where radio stations are playing good news, where the scriptures have been translated into languages that people know. But it's actually that 20 to 15% of people that still, of workers, of international workers that are trying to reach out, only 15 to 20% are reaching the least reached people. So that's an emphasis that the Christian Missionary Alliance has taken on as a challenge, that we need to change the focus of some of our works, most of our work, to the least reached people of the world who have yet to understand in their language or in their culture that the good news of Jesus is for them as well, and that he would love to reach out and touch them. So I joined a small team working with the least reached Muslim Filipinos in the southern part of the Philippines. I have worked there now for the past 5 years. My training was not in this line. I even fought with God for a while, saying, I'm not called to that kind of ministry. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I haven't been trained. And it actually took me, these 5 years, I'm not at all a master, but it actually just started by getting to know some Filipino Muslims and seeing God's heart for them and their responsiveness to be people of peace in their own country as well. One of the women we work with is on a spiritual journey, and we have been doing some peace-building seminars with her. We got to know her for a bit and invited her to study the Book of Mark with us in the manuscript Bible study method. Oh, yeah, this is me in the hospital. Sorry, I was going to show you that. This is a great story. Kim and Kurt Peters live in Spain, and this gal who we helped go through college has now married a Spanish guy and lives in Barcelona. And it's my prayer someday that they can meet Kim and Kurt, and that this gal, Rizal, would be able to connect with them in Spain. I actually went to Spain on my way back to Canada when Kurt and Kim were here, and now they're back and I'm here. So someday I'll also meet Kurt and Kim, but this family, Rizal and her siblings, took care of me when I was in the hospital along with my Ambrose intern, and God was so faithful. This Bible type of Bible study that we took our friend through, it's called Manuscript Bible Study. Has anyone heard of this? It's an intervarsity type method where you take the chapter and verse out of the script and you just read it as if it's a story. And you go. We went through the book of Mark 1 and 2. We went through Acts 1 and 2. And it was during this When we were discussing this story of this woman, at this part in this story, she told us that she had had a dream about a man with a shining white long dress and his hands open to her, that Jesus had appeared to her to be healed and to go in peace. This is my Muslim friend from the Philippines. Back to our story, one more time. The defensive disciples. The interaction that happened between Jesus and his disciples only was recorded in Mark and Luke. And Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" It was also stated in those Gospels that there was a crowd, according to Mark, a large crowd. So they were all touching him. And the people heard that he could heal, and so they wanted a piece of the action. Who touched me? What an interesting question. Do you think it was rhetorical? You know, when someone asks, "Are you sure?" Like, sometimes Jesus asks. In fact, I found a website, 135 questions that Jesus asked. Some like in Matthew 6:27, "Who are you, by worrying, can add a single hour to their life?" In Matthew 9:5, "Which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up and walk?" In Mark 10:51, "What do you want me to do?" he said to the blind man, obviously. Another one in Luke 14:34, "Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again?" So some questions are rhetorical, and this is a teaching tool that Jesus often used when he was about to make a point or reveal the character of the Father. So who did touch him? He asked, "Who touched me?" Was it rhetorical? Not in this case. He wanted to know. He wanted to see the woman who had such great faith. And in fact, it says that he felt power leaving him. Jesus was so in tune with the people around him that he felt someone's faith that powerfully. And his power cured and healed this woman who had such great faith to reach out and just touch the hem of his clothes. Now, every disciple pushed back against his query. "Everyone was pushing on you," they said. "How are we to know who could it be?" But there was something about her touch. They were not noticing the story that was going on inside the story. And sometimes God is up to something in our stories, and we, his disciples, are not paying attention. I wasn't paying attention to things that he was doing in my story when I got sick. I wasn't paying attention when he was using the friendship I had with this Muslim woman, that she was also encountering Christ. It might be to our surprise who touches Jesus and who Jesus touches. God is on a mission to rescue all of his people, even the most unsuspecting. And the defensive disciples were not aware of what was going on, and sometimes we are also not aware of what was going on. Years earlier, my friend had finished her university training, and as a teacher, she married a Muslim man who was also a teacher. They kept very busy, and they were not able to have children. As it is in the custom of Muslim circles, her husband discussed the possibility of getting a second wife so he could have a child. She asked for 4 more years, and in the meantime, they adopted a twin girl from his brother and raised this baby as their own. But after 4 more years, he mentioned it again that he wanted his own child and asked for a second wife. She asked for another 4 years and was still not able to conceive. So after 12 years of marriage, the husband asked permission to take on another wife. "My friend would rather be divorced than be a second wife, and so that is what she did." They got divorced. Though she has been lonely and sad as days go by, she has not forgotten that Jesus the Messiah, or Isa al-Masih, has come to her in a dream to comfort her and encourage her with words, "Go in peace." She keeps busy with her work and helping people in displaced areas of her city. She has also partnered with us in teaching the Peace Generation curriculum. I have some displayed out there, and I talked a little bit about it yesterday morning, of this peace curriculum that we're working on together in Mindanao. She's also a dorm mother to many children in her community. And as a teacher, she continues to be a woman of peace, working on her master's degree. She joined us, this is her again teaching at the Peace Generation trainings. She joined us at a ladies' weekend where we studied in manuscript style the Book of Ruth. It was this February when my coworker retired and gathered a few of us ladies to have this retreat. This friend told us that we were the kindest, closest friends she has ever had. And my other Muslim friend, who knows Jesus, said, it's because of Jesus. And it created a wonderful conversation for these two Muslim women to talk with one another. Now back to our story, for the last time. What about the noisy funeral crowd? There were well-intentioned friends of Jairus gathered around the family at their time of grief, but they gave Jesus a hard time. Sometimes there are naysayers in our lives, and we need to let Jesus kick them out so that he can work his miracles. There will always be noisy crowds to block us from the Savior. And now to the final character of our story, the 12-year-old girl. Now she has a testimony. I once was dead, and now I'm alive. Sure enough, Jesus took her by the hand. There was something about his touch. She was cared for by her family and her community, and as she walked out of that darkness into light, from death to life, we can only hope that she grew up to be a disciple, a strong follower of Jesus and the way, and had a reputation that spread around the area. And in a crowd like this, like me, I'm guessing there are some of you who have stories of healing or coming back from darkness to light. This verse that we stand beside testifies to our common understanding of the God of creation. In our holy scriptures, I read in 1 Peter 2:9, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. And my prayer is that the God of creation would continue to reveal himself to Muslim friends like this, and maybe some that you have, and bring them from darkness to light. Now, in a story like this that we have just discussed, I'm wondering if you can relate to some of the characters in the story today. Are you like the dad, like the bleeding woman, maybe like the daughter or the disciples or the noisy crowd? Or are you able to be Jesus to your community, to your neighbors, to your family? There's something about the touch. Something happens when we touch Jesus and when he touches us. Of course, there is something about a physical touch that is so powerful when we are sick, distraught, feeling rejected or discouraged or lonely. There's also emotional touches that we can get from God and from others. And of course, there are spiritual touches. I'd like to be so brave this morning, as if we were in a service of another faith, and practice passing the peace. I have been in a Catholic nation for 17-plus years, and there's a beautiful thing that they do at parts of the service. They just reach out their hands like this, and you put your hand in the other person's hand, and you say the Lord's Prayer together. So if you're comfortable doing that to the person next to you, you can just put out your hand and they can put their hand in it, or you can hold hands. And if you're comfortable saying the Lord's Prayer together, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. I trust that that touch and the words that the Lord gave us to pray to him encourages our heart. And let us not be afraid to represent Jesus and touch others. Let's not be afraid to touch others by releasing the healing of Jesus. And let us be touched in our faith with the beautiful exchange of heaven touching earth and earth touching God. There is something in the touch of the Master's hand. And I pray that you would also be one to bring that to the people of Prince George this week. As I am also able to spend another week here in Prince George, I hope we encounter one another and recognize the touch of Jesus in each of our lives.